Well, good morning, TNC family, from my home to wherever you are on this second Sunday in December. I want to begin with Isaiah chapter 40 and verses 3 through 5, the words of the Lord to Isaiah for the people. In other words, the Creator God spoke to Isaiah and said, Isaiah, speak these words over the people. And so now, TNC, these are words of our God spoken over you and me. Comfort, comfort my people. Speak tenderly to Jerusalem. Tell her that the warfare has ended and their guilt has been removed. Call this out from the desert. O people, prepare for God's arrival. Make straight and smooth a highway fit for our God. For every valley shall be exalted, every mountain and hill made low. The rough ground shall become level, the rugged places a plain, and the glory of the Lord will be revealed. And all people will see it together, for the mouth of the Lord has spoken. And God, today I pray that each person listening now would hear these words of comfort for them. May they sense the tenderness of your voice. May they celebrate that the warfare has ended and their guilt has been removed. And may we all be part of making straight and smooth a highway for our God, exalting those who are in the valleys of life and lowering the mountainous obstacles that so many have to climb and smoothing out the rough places. God, we embrace this glorious agenda today and in this season. Amen. So I want to talk to you today from the scriptures, from Matthew's biography of Jesus, starting in chapter 2 and verse 2, where we are told, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem in Judea in the time of King Herod, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, from the east to Jerusalem. And as early as 200 AD, Tertullian, an academic and author from Carthage in the Roman province of Africa, argued that these wise men were both astrologers and kings, and that their visit fulfilled Solomon's prayer in Psalm 72, quote, may the kings of Sheba and Seba present him gifts, and fulfilled Isaiah's prophecy, chapter 60, quote, nations will come to your light, and kings to the brightness of your dawn, and all from Sheba will come, bearing gold and incense, and proclaiming the praise of the Lord. Now, ancient Sheba is in modern Ethiopia, about 1,500 miles from Jerusalem. And so think with me, these men of wisdom and power and influence and money made a long journey from the east to Jerusalem across a landscape that is exceedingly diverse. Huge deserts and granite and sandstone mountain passes and scarce water supplies. And modern writers who have made this journey tell us that in these conditions, you travel best if you have serious footwear on your feet and coverings for your body and face and bring plenty of water with you, they say. And even on camels or donkeys, the best you can hope for, the best is like 20 miles a day. And so a journey of about 1,500 miles at 20 miles a day will take you about 75 days to Jerusalem, then from Jerusalem to Bethlehem, and then from the hills of Bethlehem down to the place, verse 11 says, where the star stopped. And they make this long journey, as they tell King Herod in Jerusalem, because they have been reading the prophecies and studying the stars, and they want to experience the one born into the world to redeem the world. Which means, and I hope you see this, they don't have to make the journey. I mean, hey, listen up, wise men. You have options. Just read about the prophecies from your palace in the east or your lazy boy in the living room. Or You can join a group that's studying the star, reading and talking and debating and forming theologies about it. Or, if you've had a long day at work, don't even go to the star study group. Just don't show up, or just cancel via text. Stay in, watch some TV, eat some Doritos. Just plan to go to the local church for the Christmas program another year. But the wise men go all the way to Bethlehem, a long journey following the star. And verse 9 tells us that the star led them until it stopped above the place where the child was. Which makes me wonder, can you see in your imagination these wise men, dusty but determined, standing at the very doorstep of their destiny? Probably not singing these words, although they could have. We three kings from Orient are bearing gifts. We've traveled so far. A long obedience to the star. And verse 11 tells us, then they came into the house and saw the child with Mary, his mother. They bowed down and worshiped him. And how did they worship him? The text said they opened their treasures and presented him with gifts of gold and incense and myrrh. And here you'll notice they came not to be worshiped, but to worship. They came not to be blessed, but to bring blessing, not to sightsee, but to surrender. In other words, they are not going as tourists. They are going as pilgrims. And now I'm borrowing a phrase from Eugene Peterson, the prolific author and writer who, in perhaps his most famous book titled A Long Obedience in the Same Direction, a phrase he borrows from Friedrich Nietzsche, A Long Obedience in the Same Direction, Peterson writes, quote, one aspect of the world that I have been able to identify as harmful is the assumption that anything worthwhile can be acquired at once. We assume that if something can be done at all, it can be done quickly and efficiently. And now, TNC, you should probably think about 15-second commercials and 2-minute YouTube do-it-yourself videos and wisdom for life from tweets and 2-sentence posts and a daily multivitamin instead of exercise and vegetables and gambling with your money instead of just working hard and making daily deposits. Peterson goes on, quote, there is a great market for religious experiences in our world, but there is little enthusiasm for the patient acquisition of virtue, little inclination to sign up for a long apprenticeship to Jesus Christ. Rather, religion in our time has been captured by the tourist mindset. A visit to an attractive site to be made when we have adequate leisure. An occasional visit to a special service, retreat, rally, or conference. With a bent for entertainment and sacred diversion. We go to see a new personality, to hear a new truth, to get a new experience, and so somehow expand our otherwise humdrum lives. But the Christian cannot mature under such conditions. And he goes on to say, we must pursue a long obedience in the same direction. We must choose the life of a pilgrim, not the life of a tourist. Now, if you're a tourist, think with me, you think of life as a collection of great experiences for observation or for a scrapbook. Hey, let's buy a magnet from there, or let's take another souvenir back home. Take some pictures, and when we get back, we'll write a blog entry or a Facebook post about the warm emotions we felt at that event. That's a tourist. But the essence of a pilgrim is on their way to something, not just in geographical destination terms. It's to experience a kind of life they have not yet experienced, to enter into a new kind of life. It's a long obedience in the same direction, or to use the metaphor, following the star daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, faithfully, for a lifetime, a long obedience in the same direction. And you read Matthew's story, and it's clear the wise men are not tourists, they're pilgrims. Which leads to this single question for you and me today. Do you want to experience Christmas this season as a tourist or as a pilgrim? Do you want to experience Christmas this season as a tourist or as a pilgrim? And let me just give you two bits of wisdom surrounding the difference before you answer. Because if you want to experience Christmas as a pilgrim, if you want to experience it as a pilgrim, you will need to embrace at least two things. And here's the first. First, you will have to be adaptable. Because the essence of a pilgrim is adaptability. The opposite of a tourist, who typically wants to control their experience, plan the day and the time of the trip, order tickets ahead of time for the show, make reservations for breakfast at that five-star hotel banquet room, plan the clothes they will wear to the big event that evening, maybe purchase a fast pass, parks, valet, pay a little extra for the backstage VIP experience. Plan ahead. But the pilgrim is adaptable. The pilgrim is not sure what desert, valley, or rough hills they will face, not sure where the star will stop, not sure how long it will take. It will be a long obedience in the same direction. I'll just follow the star until it stops. And of course, now listen, that's the pilgrim's secret. They know the goal of their following, which is the goal is just wherever the star stops. I'm making the point that what is not flexible for the pilgrim is the goal of the journey, but what is flexible for the pilgrim is the journey itself to get there, which is why a pilgrim must be adaptable, stubborn about the goal, stubborn about the ultimate direction, but not stuck in their ways about how to get there. Now, at the mundane level, I was reminded of this last Monday night, when the Patriots played the Bills at Buffalo. With temperatures in the low 30s and wind gusts up to 50 miles per hour and swirling snow and freezing rain, and the Bills quarterback, Josh Allen, attempted 30 passes because it was part of their midweek game plan. But the Patriots quarterback, 3 passes. The Patriots ran the ball 46 times, but they threw the ball just 3. First time in 40 years of football that that's happened. 3 times, and on one of them, if you watch the game, on one of them, the offensive coordinator, Josh McDaniels, was screaming at Jones, the Patriots quarterback, because the quarterback checked into a pass that would make sense based upon the game plan, but not based upon the weather. And everyone afterwards in the press and among other football players and personnel were all saying versions of this. Most NFL coaches typically have a go-to move or a well-thought-out game plan in the days before a game, which they follow no matter what. And it's hard to scrap that plan for these coaches. And it's not even being stubborn, by the way. It's sometimes that you know what works for you and you stick with the plan. But Belichick, everyone was reminded of and commenting on, the greatest coach in the history of football, he doesn't think like that. He has no scheme and he doesn't care. He will tell his coaches things like, hey, whatever we need to do to win the game, we're going to do. All he cares about is the end goal after the long game. He just wants to win. A long obedience towards winning, you might say. Peyton Manning, He said on the broadcast that as a quarterback, you want to see the defense's tendencies, but every time he ever played Belichick in his career, he discovered Belichick's defenses have no tendencies. He'll adapt to anything. Adaptability. And now let's think about Mary and Joseph in the Christmas story. You could make a case that their number one quality is adaptability. Mary says, I'll follow you, God, no matter where you lead. A long obedience in the same direction. And I get it. The journey won't be exactly like I map it out to be. It will involve sacrifices and interruptions and deep commitment and the possibility of, in the words of Simeon, a sword piercing my own soul. But I'll adapt because I know who I'm following. And Joseph, TNC, says roughly the same thing. He says, God, I'll follow you no matter where you lead. A long obedience in the same direction. I'll amend my theology. I'll face social scrutiny. The journey, I get it, won't be linear, but it will be in the same direction, always following the star. And the wise men say, we'll follow the star. 1,500 miles, a long obedience in the same direction. And here's what I think this means for us, TNC, this season. If you want to be a tourist this season, it's actually pretty easy. Just check online for some Christmas Eve programs and check online for the mall hours of operations. Make sure you arrive on time, avoid parking issues, and so on. But if you want to be a pilgrim, then, well, whatever your plan is for kindness, expect to extend more. Whatever your plan is for giving, expect to give more. Whatever your plan is for struggle, expect more. Whatever your plan is for patience, expect it will require more. Whatever your plan is to serve others, expect to serve more. And by the way, this all means that whatever your plan is for joy and peace, expect more joy and peace too when you follow the star. Brennan Manning, and for those of you who do know his name, you know that the better part of wisdom is to pay attention to what he's about to say. In his book called Ruthless Trust, Manning writes, quote, the way of trust is to leap into the undefined, into ambiguity, not into some predetermined, clearly delineated plan for the future. The path of the pilgrim, and yes, he uses that word too, the path of the pilgrim is leaving what is nailed down, obvious, and secure, and walking into the unknown without any rational explanation to justify the decision or guarantee the future. Why, he writes, because God has signaled the movement and offered it his presence and his promise. His presence, Emmanuel, God with us, the heart of Christmas. His promise, I will never leave you nor forsake you. I'll come to Bethlehem as a baby. And this is the first observation, TNC, today. If you want to experience Christmas as a pilgrim, and it's your choice, but if you do, you will need to plan on your plans being interrupted and amended and your opportunities being larger and bigger and more divine. Plan on adaptability. Because you can be a tourist or a pilgrim in the days ahead, but our call is to be a pilgrim. And here's number two, if you want to experience Christmas as a pilgrim. Second, if you want to experience Christmas as a pilgrim, you will need to take on the mindset of a giver, not a receiver. Because the text says, when they came into the house and saw the child with Mary, his mother, they bowed down and worshipped him. They opened their treasure boxes and gave him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And I just really admire these wise men, and I think we should too. I mean, they're real people. Homes and jobs and bills and families. And not only do they leave their positions in the East to embark on a dangerous and difficult journey, but their primary purpose for going isn't to get or to experience something for themselves. It's to give. It's not to sightsee, but to surrender. Not to post pictures from their trip when they get back, but to actually go on a journey with the divine. It's a radical story, and it does a ton of things, including inverting how we think about gifts. Because typically, you understand, peasants travel to offer gifts to a king, either to demonstrate loyalty or to request a favor. But here, kings bring gifts to peasants. This is why, TNC, you and I have to be confronted with the generosity of Christmas. First of all, God's generosity to us. That's the ultimate giving we celebrate at Christmas. But then I don't know how you can miss this in the Christmas story. Mary and Joseph and the baby Jesus are peasants, a family in desperate financial need, and they've received support from wealthy wise men, gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And many scholars believe that this money was absolutely critical early in Jesus' life. And I wonder how many times Mary told Jesus about the generous gifts of the wise men. After all, Jesus was too young to remember their visit. And I wonder how it shaped Mary and Joseph's own generosity when they came back to Nazareth and Joseph established himself as a respected and well-to-do carpenter. And I wonder if Jesus saw over and over again how generosity shapes hearts and builds trust and encourages unity and community among people. And I wonder if it's why, in the Gospels, Jesus tells about 30 parables and 19 of them are about money. And I think it's because Jesus knew there's just no way to follow the star, a long obedience in the same direction, if you're following the money. Because you can't serve two masters. You will either love the one and hate the other, or hate the one and love the other. You cannot serve both God and money. And of course, I'm quoting Luke chapter 16. And in fact, if you try to serve both masters, if you try, you'll just get consumed with worry and greed and selfishness and pride and division and even war. How much do I have? How much do I need? How much do I owe? How much can I afford to give? How much do I deserve to keep? I have a friend who lives in the northern part of Oregon. His name is Mark. And he has a friend, a guy named Michael Culpepper, who lives in a smaller town north of him, who bought a used car from a reputable car dealership. He read Consumer Reports. He test drove the car. He negotiated a fair price, took it out for a ride, took out a partial loan, put a couple $1,000s down, and he loved his new car, Mark said. But then the knob on his dashboard came off, and then there was a rattle coming from somewhere, and not long after that, the car started overheating, and for no good reason, a fuse blew. And Mark told me on the phone that for the first month, Michael's car was in the shop more than it was in his driveway. Finally, he had had enough, so he went back to the dealer. He talked to the general manager, and he asked for a refund, but he was told, sorry, all deals are final here. You're stuck with your purchase. And so in what Mark described as a brilliant move, his words, not mine, his friend painted a big lemon on each side of the car with the words, I bought this lemon at Sunshine Chevrolet. And then in smaller letters, ask me about how bad they are. And he drove the car around that small town for 3 weeks before he got a call. Mr. Culpepper, we'd like to offer you your money back, and we'll go ahead and take the car back. Because I'll tell you, money can really mess with you, and money can do some crazy things to relationships and to your own soul. And the Christmas story reminds us that if you follow the money, you'll be in trouble. But if you follow the star, it's just more blessed to give than to receive. And the essence of worship is giving. Like when they go into the house to worship the baby, they don't just sing a bunch of songs. They give. because you can follow every moral law and every moral teaching. And now I'm thinking about the story of the rich young ruler who comes to Jesus. You can follow everything, but Jesus will say, you lack one thing. Go and be generous with the poor and come follow me. Because there's a link between your money and your heart. And if you're a pilgrim, then this is always a real area where we can keep growing. Because a tourist is always generous with themselves. A tourist wants to receive a blessing, receive information, receive, be wowed, be impressed, be inspired by something. But a pilgrim wants to go on a more expansive journey. And the only way to expand your world is to be generous with others, to give to a new situation, the new environment, the new reality, the amended plan. You know, I wonder along the way how many times the wise men thought about using the gold, frankincense, and myrrh for their own travel needs. But then I imagine them saying, no, we're on a long journey and we know our direction, and it ends with our hearts, which are linked to this gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And so we will hold on to the gifts until we get there. And by the way, TNC, I'm not trying to overplay the money deal here. I'm just trying to say, how can you actually read the story of the wise men and not see that gold, frankincense, and myrrh are the centerpiece? I'm just saying that if you want to experience Christmas as a pilgrim and not a tourist, then you're going to have to wrestle with what the gold, frankincense, and myrrh means for you and for me. Because today we stand at the doorstep of our own Bethlehem. It's the Christmas season. And what I have to know is, and what you have to know is, you can travel all the way to the doorstep of your destiny, and you can intend to cross the threshold of that doorstep, but a long journey of good intentions will just leave you stuck at the doorstep. But the wise men, the text says, when they came, they went into the house. They crossed the doorstep of their destiny, and they chose the path of a pilgrim, not a tourist, which is my opportunity and yours this season. So, will you be adaptable? And will you be a giver? Will you be a pilgrim? Or will you just be a tourist? I hope we all sign up for a long obedience in the same direction and be pilgrims, disciples, followers of the one born in the Bethlehem manger this season. Let's pray. God, I pray now for each person listening. I pray that they would know your generosity to them and your love for them this season. I pray that they would feel your love and that they would feel the love of this TNC community for them. And then I also pray that the love that they feel would energize and encourage and elevate them as they move through these next days ahead. I pray that they would be adaptable and generous as pilgrims. I pray that they would choose a long obedience in the same direction and be assured of your presence, Emmanuel, God with us. And now may the Lord bless you and keep you. Make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord turn his face toward you and give you peace. Amen.